Okay, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on Tzadi Amud Bet. The Mishnah says, "Birishona ayu omrim." In the beginning, they used to say, "Shalosh nos shim yotzot venotlot ketuba." These three women are entitled to a divorce, and in that process, they also collect their ketuba. We know from the Gemara in Ketubot and the Mishnayot there that if a woman gets her ketuba, that generally indicates that she rightfully is getting divorced, and that she is not held accountable or responsible for the fact that there is a divorce over here. So despite the fact that we're going to see here these women say something that seems to implicate them, or possibly you would consider that they should lose their ketubah, nevertheless, they are getting their ketubah and divorced. The first one is, Omeret Tmeya Ani Lecha. One who says that, I was involved in an extramarital affair. Now, the Gemara will discuss this, because if the woman really is involved in an extramarital affair, she's not entitled to anything. So then, why should she, in this case, get her ketubah? So that will be the discussion in the Gemara as to why that's the case, or what exactly the circumstances are here. Shamayim beini levenecha. The sky is between me and you, or the differences between us are like the distance between heaven and earth. And she's basically indicating that there's a big gap in their marriage that cannot be overcome. Now, in general, and the way that Yerushalmi uses it, and it's the way it's used in the Midrashim and other places, here the Ran quotes it in a Midrash that deals with Sarah and Abraham, it has a much broader meaning or a broader context, which means generally that there's a problem or there's an issue that's irreconcilable or unresolvable, and that's what it means, Shamayim Beini Uvenecha. In our Gemara, in the Bavli here, it's going to take it to mean a very specific thing, which is that this individual does not produce sperm that is shot with pressure into the woman, and therefore she cannot become pregnant. So this is the woman's claim, which is that I'm not going to have children with this man. He is impotent, and therefore it's going to cause me problems where I'm not going to have children. Now, the Rishonim point out of here that by itself is not a good enough claim, because the woman is not nitztava by prior rivya. So just the fact that she can't have children is not a sufficient reason or grounds for divorce, but rather she has to make a claim alongside of it, which is beina chutra liyado umoro lekvura, that I need a stake or a stick to walk with when I'm older and spade to dig my grave, meaning that I need someone to take care of me. I need, in my old age, to have children who will look after me and be my company then. So alongside of that taina, then she can sue for divorce, because then she has a real taina. But prior rivya in and of itself is not a grounds for divorce for the woman, because she's not nitztava prior rivya. Unitula ani min yudim. She takes a neder that she will not get hana'a from any Jew. Here, in the context of the Mishnah as well as the Gemara, we'll see that means that she restricts herself in getting hana'at tashmish from any Jew. Now, there are two issues with that. Number one is, why does it matter? The only person that matters for her is her husband. As far as everyone else outside of the husband, they are asurim already. Forget about a neder, they're asurim in a Torah, because she's married to this individual. And we have a principle, ein isur chal al isur. All she's doing is stacking an isur on top of another existing isur. Why should the neder take effect, if that's the case? So the way that the Balei HaTosafot, the Ran answer over here, is that it's an Isur Kolel. Generally, we have a principle of Ein Isur Chal Isur. There are exceptions to that rule. One of those exceptions to that rule is Isur Mosif, where the Isur expands the nature of the Isur. So for instance, something was Asur Bachila before, now it's also Asur Bahana'a. So that extra Isur allows you to place one Isur on top of the other, because it's doing something more. Isur Kolel is an Isur that expands the number of people that the Isur is relevant to. So over here, she expands the Isur from everyone else in the world to also include her husband. And so by doing that in Isur Kolel, it would then overcome the deficit of Ein Isur Chalal Isur, because in Isur Kolel. The Rishonim point out that it's not so simple, because the Gemara in the beginning of the Perek said that Stam Mishnah, or this Stam Perek, is Aliba de Rabbi Yossi. The Rabbi Yossi is the author of the Mishnayot in this Perek. And we know that Rabbi Yossi doesn't hold of Isur Kolel. By the case of Eshed Ish ben Asit Chamuto, it's a case there where Rabbi Yossi says, Ein Isur Chalal Isur, despite the fact that it is Isur Kolel. So that would make it a difficult way to explain the Mishnah. There are those that try to explain it as being an Isur Mosif, But that is definitely an issue. We could argue that what the Gemara meant when Rabbi Yossi is the author of the Mishnayot in this parak, because we've seen that before, the Gemara said that that Mishnah is like Rabbi Akiva, and that Mishnah is like this authorship, that in issues with regards to Beino Beinah versus Inu Nefesh, only in that issue do they say that the Mishnayot are like Rabbi Yossi, meaning that everything in our Mishnah is going to be deemed Beino Beinah and not Inu Nefesh, and that's the Shito of Rabbi Yossi. So that might be the only thing that the Gemara means. It doesn't mean that they're completely authored or the attribution is to Rabbi Yossi completely. It just means with regards to that one issue, the Mishnayot in this parak follow that Shita of Rabbi Yossi. So that might be another way to deal with it. The second thing is, why is she entitled to a ketubah in the case of Netula Anim Yehudim? Here, she's the one who's precipitating the divorce. By taking a neder, she's now restricting her husband, Bitashmish. If that's the case, she's the one who precipitated the divorce. She should not be entitled to a Tubah. So everybody here quotes Rashi from Yevamot, the Tosfot quotes it well, Perish B'Yevamot, Anan Sade, Taleita Noder Kach, Anam King Kadeshmish Kashela, Behi Kimo Anusa. That the only reason that a woman would take such a neder is because intimate relations are very difficult for her, painful for her, and the reason she's taking the neder is because she just can't handle it anymore. So in that case, she's deemed to be an Anusa. She's taking the neder not because she wants to stay away from her husband, or she wants to stay away from other people. It's because this is so difficult for her, and she's really an anusa in this case, and that's why she's entitled to her ketubah. Right now, the Mishnah then says, after it gives us the original idea, or the original psak halacha, that was in practice, it changed. And then, chazru lomar, which now we'll call Mishnah achrona, they stopped doing this, and they changed their minds. The way that the Rosh interprets it over here is, nitzkalkalu hadorot. Things deteriorated. And because of that, we now have to worry about the fact that women would use this as a vehicle for escaping their marriage rather than simply telling the truth. Or, you have this problem always with regards to whether it's amigo or whether like modeh b'mitzvot, and Rav Nachman is clearly as a dayan aware of this fact, which is that once you have a principle in place, after a certain amount of time, everybody learns the principle, and then they know how to cheat the system, and they know how to game the system. So if we say that when a person is kofar bakol, they don't have to take a shvuah, but if they're modeh b'mitzvot, they do have to take a shvuah, eventually what's going to happen is that people are going to stop being modeh b'mitzvot, and they're going to force them over to be kofar bakol, despite all the chazakot that are associated with it, because they know that's their way out. So Rav Nachman institutes what's called shvuat heset, to force people who are kofar bakol also to take a shvuah, so there's no escape route. Same thing with amigo. When we say that we believe a person because they have a better taina, then over time what the ganav is going to learn is if he makes this taina, he's going to get away with it. So you could argue the same thing over here, which is that the women in the beginning were telling the truth, but over time women started to realize that Beit Din would align with them if they used these ta'anot. And once they started to learn that or became a precedent of sorts, then women started to abuse it as well and utilize it as a means for escaping their marriage. Now remember, this is in situations where there was very little recourse for the woman in marriage, and therefore the greatest recourse that the woman had in marriage was one withholding of intimate relations, like the Gemara in Ketubot addresses with regards to moredet, and whether we support the woman or we don't support the woman. And over here, you can see also here where she makes claims that will force her to separate from the husband, because that's another way for her to escape or recourse. If she says, Tamei ani lecha, right, then the husband is now restricted from engaging with her. So that's why the woman might utilize these vehicles, because she has very few options in terms of escaping the marriage in those days. As women became more empowered or are able to ask for divorce or articulate that and it's not considered to be taboo at all, then I think these issues become less so. Although we still find that these things come up and that people do lie to escape a marriage only because of, and that's what the Gemara is going to say here, Shloti Aisha no tenetenea ba'acher umekalkelet al ba'ala. That what the woman is doing is that she fell in love with someone else, and now she wants to escape the marriage. So she uses one of these claims, which she know will get her out of the marriage whole and with her ketubah. And that's the big thing there. I mean, she might be able to get out of her marriage without a ketubah, but that she doesn't want. She wants to get out of the marriage with the money. So this will allow her that escape route and allow her to go marry the love of her life, or supposedly love of her life, whoever she fell in love with. So we started to realize that the women were using this as a route to, whether it's called extramarital love, but some sort of love that she wanted to escape her marriage. Homeret, tamei ani lecha. So then, if the woman makes a claim that I am tmeya, tavi raya l'dvara, let her bring proof to the fact that she is tmeya. Now, this has interesting implications because, first of all, in general, what happens in this situation where the woman says tmeya ani l'cha? She makes a claim that I had some sort of extramarital affair. Leaving aside now what the Gemara is going to do and qualify the statement about exactly what the circumstance is. So here we said that she's entitled to her ketubah because of the fact that she claims to me, which seems strange. Because if she had an extramarital affair, she's not entitled to her ketubah. So obviously this is in a situation which the Gemara will say there's a situation where she was raped and it's dealing with a Kohen. And since she was raped with a Kohen, the Kohen, she now has a din of zonah, and the Kohen cannot take her back. So in that instance, what happens here? Here we're saying, okay, no, we don't believe her, because we don't believe a woman without a din. She doesn't have a right to say, tmeya ani l'cha. She doesn't have a right to just make a declaration like that. The only time that makes her asur to her husband is if there was prior kinui v'stira, if there was other things in the surroundings that indicate to us that there was a problem coming, and that makes her asura to her husband. But otherwise, she shouldn't be asura to her husband. But now, when she makes such a declaration, she makes herself into a chaticha shelisura. She makes herself into non-kosher meat, in the sense like, if you already declare yourself being tmeya, so how do we then continue the marriage in this context? Which is not so simple. So first of all, you can see the Rambam in the Perush of Mishnayot already deals with this at some level, which is Nitamet znuta be'idim. That first of all, the znut is only considered to be problematic if it's backed up by edim. Number two is, with regards to the husband, va'bichira lo imratza legaresh v'imratza shetiyeh tachtav achar she'ein sham edim. In the situation where she makes such a declaration, there are no edim, the husband has a choice now. He can keep the woman and say that, no, I'm not going to divorce her. Or he can divorce the woman. We leave the ball in his court to decide what to do. But then you run into an interesting problem, which is that she's declared that she's tmeya. If she really did have an extramarital affair, he is asur to be with her. That is a restriction min ha-Torah. So the Rambam says here, why don't we say to him, listen, if you want to keep her, that's fine. But that means that you're making the decision that she's lying over here. And if she's lying, then you can stay in the marriage, but she should also be entitled to her ketubah. Because if you don't believe her, then don't believe her across the board. You can keep her as a wife, but then you have to pay her a ketubah. If you're not going to pay her a ketubah, that means that you believe her. And if you believe her, then you shouldn't be able to stay together with her. Make your choice. That's what the Rambam asks. The Rambam brings up a principle that we've seen before and we'll see again, which is the paginan dibura, that we split her words. We're able to bifurcate her statement and say, we'll believe her with regards to the dine mamon, and we won't believe her with regards to the dine isur. The beginning of the Zalamar, Shanu Neminu, La Davar Batzmo, La Ezu Inyan, Shia, Lo Nimni, Le Anyan Acher. We'll believe her with one issue, and not with the other issue. Alright, so that tells us that in this instance, even though the husband will, according to Rama, have a choice to keep her as a wife in this instance, nevertheless, it will still not grant her the ketubah if he keeps her. Because we will, Pagin and Dibura, will believe her with regards to the ketubah, we won't believe her with regards to the tzad of Isur. In addition to that, with regards to Truma, question of her entitlement to eat Truma is somewhat problematic. Because in this case, with regards to the husband, she is not a chaticha shel Isura because he can have bi'ah with her. He's not restricted. He's not believing her. And she can't stop the husband from engaging in bi'ah with her because of that Isur, because that's her issue that she declared her Isur, not the husband. But as the Gemara is going to say that she's married to a Kohen, that would mean that she's still entitled to eat Truma. Now, if she's entitled to eat Truma, that could be something that is an Isur Doraita. If she's really telling the truth, and she's a Zonah, she's not entitled to Truma anymore. And yet, we're letting her violate an Isur Doraita. Number two is, if the woman is telling the truth, and the husband stays with her, that's also an Isur Doraita. How did the Chachamim come here and be Mafkia a din d'oraita, which says when she's tmeani, she's believed, and say, no, you know what? She's not believed until a din come. How did the Chachamim change something like that and now allow for violations of isurim d'oraita? So you could answer with regards to truma that she's only entitled to eat truma d'rabbonon. Maybe that solves the problem. But with regard to the isur bia for a husband after she's had an extramarital affair, that's still a din d'oraita. So the Ran takes up the issue as well as the Balei HaTosafot. Herald the Rishonim asked this question about why is it that in this instance the Chachamim have such a right to override. All right, so the Ran brings what the Tosafot says, and the Balei HaTosafot, you can see it inside here, also say this, that the Chachamim are Oker Devar Min HaTorah. We find that the Chachamim have power to be Oker Devar Min HaTorah. Rosh Hashanah is approaching. We know that the Chachamim are Mafki are right to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, even though it's a mitzvah d'oraita. Nevertheless, they allow for being Oker the mitzvah d'oraita. So the Ran brings that sheet of the Tosafot and says, but that generally only applies to a shave ve'al taseh. That only comes when you're doing passive violation of an isur d'oraita, like not blowing the shofar. On the other hand, here we're allowing the husband to engage intimately with his wife, which means that he's actively violating a isur d'oraita, that's a kumvaseh. And we don't find that the Chachamim are empowered to be Oker Devar Min HaTorah when it's a kum ve'aseh. So the Balei HaTosafot over here say that that's not necessarily the case. They say that when it comes to Migdar Milta, when it comes to the Chachamim establishing certain principles or certain guidelines, and it's important enough, and there's a very good svara to do it, that the Chachamim are empowered to violate the Nisud Oraita through their takanot, even the kum ve'aseh. It happens to be, we saw this in the Gemara in Ketubot as well, with regards to the Ne'manut of a woman. In the case of an Aguna, how come the Chachamim were able to be Oker Arayot De'oraita? So over there we had different approaches in the Rishonim as to whether the issue was a Derabonan issue or a D'oraita issue. Over there, the Balei HaTosafot suggest that the Ne'manut of the woman is only Midrabanan. So then how did the Chachamim override in that situation? They say something very similar. That when there's a good svara, and there's a lot of evidence that shows that this should be the case, the Chachamim are willing to be Oker Devar Min HaTorah, even Bekum Vaseh.
That's a radical approach.
It's a very radical approach. The Ramban over there rejects it and says the woman must be believed Oraita, because otherwise you run into this problem. He's unwilling to accept it. And the Ran says the same thing over here. He's unwilling to accept that. He says we have it to shave out Haseh, the Chachamim be Oker, Kum Vaseh for Horat Sha'ah, but nobody says Kum Vaseh the Dorot. That's not right. So the Ran comes up with an alternate explanation of how to deal with the situation. And he says that the Kiddushin that we have is Kiddushim Adaita Derabonan. To call the Mikadesh Adaita Derabonan Mikadesh, because when we make Kiddushim, we say Kedat Moshe B'Yisrael. So there is this embedded Tznai or condition within the Kiddushin that if the Chachamim so see fit, that they can be Oker the Kiddushim Me'ikara. So therefore, in this case, that's what they're doing. They're basically saying that they're Oker the Kiddushim Ikara, so that even if she is telling the truth, she was a panoi, she was a woman who was not married at the time, because they were Oker the Kiddushim, and therefore the husband can stay with the woman if he doesn't believe her, if he thinks she's just trying to escape the marriage. Which is conceptually interesting, because in that case, they're basically what they're doing is, if she really is telling the truth, and she had an extramarital affair, they are now absolving her of that responsibility because now they removed the Kiddushin and she wasn't married. And therefore she only had the Biyah when she was a Nuya. So it's interesting. Because we don't believe her, the Chachamim take this radical approach, which in the end, if she is telling the truth, absolves her of responsibility because now we made her into a Pnuya. But that's what the Ran suggests. She is believed over here because of this fact that it's Kiddushin Adaita Derabbanan, and the Rabbanan can be Oker the Kiddushin, and therefore they're not being Oker Din D'oraita, because since the Kiddushin didn't exist, there was no Isur D'oraita that was involved. The other possibility which he brings down, which seems to be maybe more plausible, is that, in general, the Din that the woman is believed is a Din D'Rabbanan. That when she says, Tamei Ani Lecha, and then we allow the divorce to go through in that case, that Ne'manut is only a Din Midrabonon. And that, in general, in the beginning, they believed the woman because that is a very incriminating statement. And if the woman makes that statement, then we're going to believe her. In the end, they saw that they were abusing it or misusing it. And then they went back to the Din D'oraita where the woman is not believed in those situations. So that will also solve the problem because the whole point that she was Ne'man in the first place was only a Din D'rabonon. So when the Rabbanon pulled that ability to be Ne'man, they went back to the Din D'oraita, which is, now you have to have Edim, like you did before. And that's the other possible way to explain what's happening over here. So now, the next one is, Hashemayim Beini Lebenecha, Yasu Derech Bakasha. Then they do it through pleading. The way that the Yerushalmi sets it over here is, that we try to make a Se'udah, We have a meal and we try to encourage reconciliatory words or actions between the two parties over here. Now, again, if you think it's a broader statement about their inability to deal with each other, then it makes a lot of sense. If you say that the problem is that she thinks she cannot become pregnant from this individual, then this doesn't really solve the problem. Although, again, without the taina that she says, I need a child when I'm older, she really doesn't have a right to escape the marriage in this case, and therefore we're trying to placate her that she should stay married and stay together with this man. That's one way to say it. The Tosa, Bali Tosa, and the Rosh both say something similar, which is, Vakshumi Menesh Lotu Deber Od Bo. We ask her not to speak about this issue anymore, since it's not going to help her. She's not going to get out of the marriage by mentioning this. So we tell her, just stop mentioning it. Stop going down this road because it's not going to help the situation out. The Rambam has an interesting approach over here, which is the Rambam says we're in a bind in some sort, which is we won't force the husband to divorce her because she doesn't have something that's of grounds for divorce. On the other hand, we won't force her to engage in biyah. She's not considered to be a moredet over here. She's not considered to be someone who is rebelling. She has cause. She has reason for it. And so basically what the Rambam says is we're not going to act as a beit din until they come to an agreement. And so what this idea of bakasha is, we try to entreat them and beseech them to reconcile these issues so that we can move forward with a proper outcome, whether that means divorce or whether that means they continue in the marriage. Or basically the Rambam is talking about therapy, that we try to get them into therapy or to a counselor that will get them to a point where they come to an agreed-upon solution, whether that's divorce or whether that's staying married. But we don't want to force the situation, so that's what bakasha means. The Rabbeinu Tam, the Balei Tosafot quote the Rabbeinu Tam over here, which is very interesting. The Rabbeinu Tam says, Od perish Rabbeinu Tam, yivamot yivakshu rachamim, meita makom she'ele manim. That they should daven. Bakasha means tefillah. They should daven that Hashem should grant them children and they should overcome this problem. That's another way to explain this, yivakshu, but it's an interesting, in terms of the Mishnah solution over here, that it looks to come to a better or compromise type solution and not enforce or impose the solution upon the woman, understanding that there is an issue here, but how do we solve the issue? We don't want to impose, but we want the parties to come together and come to a solution together. Nutula anim in Yehudim. In that case, yafer chelko, utei misham shato, utei mitula min Yehudim. So this is where we said that this Mishnah is like Rabbi Yossi, because over here it indicates that it's beino lebeina, because he's only allowed to be mefer his portion of the neder. So he's mefer his portion of the neder, and he's allowed to be together with her. After they get divorced, then she is netula min Yehudim. The neder remains in place, and that's it. Now, what the Mishnah Rishona thought, how come Mishnah Rishona doesn't just say yafer, that he should do hafara? So the Rosh says over here that the Mishnah Rishona sought that svar Mishnah Rishona dafil dvarim shbeino lebeina lo avid de'efsha shi'gershena. That's not called beino lebeina because there's another alternative. What's the other alternative? Divorce. He doesn't have to be mayfair. And so far the Mishnah Rishona says you can't be mayfair here. This is not something that is a problem beino lebeina because you get divorced. Now, that's an interesting solution to beino lebeina, because beino lebeina is something that impedes the ability of the husband and wife to continue in their relationship. So what's the answer? Divorce? I'm not sure that that's such a great solution, but that might be what the Mishnah Rishona was thinking according to the Rosh. Others say that the Mishnah Rishona believed that you could not be mefer a neder bechelka, that you could not be mefer only a portion of the neder, and Mishnah Achrona indicates that you can do that, and you can be mefer the chalakim, and that's why we allow her to do that. But again, it's like Rabbi Yossi. According to the Chachamim, this would have been inui nefesh, and he would be able to be mefer the entire neder. The fact that he was only mefer his portion of the neder is why we say that this Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Yossi, or is the position of Rabbi Yossi. Ibailu, amra lebaala tmeani, ma'u shetochal b'tshuma. When she says tmeani, can she continue to eat tshuma? Rav Sheshit amar ochelet, she is entitled to eat shelo totzi laz al banea. Because if we believe her in one sense, that precludes her from eating tshuma. But we don't believe her in the sense that we allow her to stay together with her husband. What's going to happen is she's going to have children from this husband. And people are going to say that these children are halalim. They were born of Isur because she was a zonah. She already had an extramarital affair. That's why she's not allowed to eat truma. And that's going to cause problems for her children. So you can't bifurcate the din over here and say, well, as far as biyah is concerned, the husband has the rights. So therefore she can't declare herself problematic. But by truma, she can declare herself problematic because she has control of that situation. The problem that arises from that is that when you bifurcate the din that way, that's going to cause problems for her children, which is that people are going to say, you know, truthfully, she really is a zonah, And that's why she's not eating truma. And that means that her children are chalalim and they're not good kohanim in the end. So we don't. We say she's got to eat truma because of that fact. Rav Amar inu achelet. Efshar da'achla chulin. She doesn't have to eat it. Maybe the husband just doesn't have truma to give her. He's not going to eat it. Let her eat chulin. It doesn't, not every Esha Kohen has to eat truma. That's not something that's so obvious or makes it clear to others that she's not eating. Amar Rava, umoder of Sheshet. Rav Sheshet will agree to me, shimnit armala she'enu achelet. Once she is widowed, then she's no longer entitled to eat truma. Because the whole reason behind Rav Sheshet is that while she's married, then we worry about her not eating truma because that'll cast aspersions on her children. If after she's divorced, we say that she can't have truma, or divorced or widowed, we say she can't have truma, they can just say after the divorce or after she was widowed, she was a zona. And that's what precluded her from eating the truma. It had nothing to do with the previous marriage. It had to do with after the marriage was terminated. And that won't cast aspersions on the children. So even Rav Sheshet will agree in that case that she cannot eat truma because it no longer has the effect of casting aspersion on her children, because now people can come up with other reasons. It's possible that later on in her marriage as well, after all the children are grown up and out of the house, and then she stops eating truma, maybe even in that case Rav Sheshet would agree, because then you could just say that it was a prospective issue. She had an extramarital affair after the children were born. That also would not affect the children. So maybe even Rav Sheshet would agree in that case. What Rav Rova is pointing out is that Rav Sheshet's logic only applies where it's going to cause problems for the children. If it doesn't cause problems for the children, that's not the case. That happened now. It's all happened. She became a zonah. Whatever transpired happened after the fact. And after the fact, that doesn't cast aspersions on her children. I mean, that she could have been raped later on, and she could have been deemed a zonah later on, and that won't affect the status of her children. Amra Papa. Bodiklon Rova. Rova tested us with this question. Eshet Kohen shenensa. Yesh laktuba, oin laktuba. A Eshet Kohen who was raped, chas v'shalom, now, what is her status with regards to getting a ktuba? Kevin d'ones l'gabe Kohen k'ratzon l'gabe Yisrael domi. Since by a Kohen, the din of a woman who was raped has the same status as a woman who had a voluntary extramarital affair for Yisrael, in laktuba. She should not be entitled to a ktuba. Odilma, matzi amra le ana hachazina. I'm fine over here. I didn't do anything wrong. V'gavrahu d'nistaf chasadeyu. And it's your bad mazel, it's your bad luck, that you're a Kohen, that's what's preventing you over here, and therefore she's entitled to the ktuba. And let's look at this. They brought it from our Mishnah. Matanitani. It's our Mishnah, we can know the answer from. Homeret me'ani l'cha yesh lak ktuba. The Mishnah says that when she declares herself to have had some sort of extramarital affair, she's entitled to her ktuba. What's the case? What exactly is this case? Ilema be'eshet Yisrael. If we're talking about that she was a wife of Yisrael, Iberatzon, whom Yeshlak Tuba, if she had a voluntary extramarital affair, she's not entitled to a Ktuba whatsoever. So how could the Mishnah say that she's entitled to a Ktuba? That certainly cannot be the case of the Mishnah. Ibonis, it was a case that she was raped, Mika Mitasra Gavra. She's not restricted from her husband. Her declaring that she was raped doesn't change the status of their marriage. She can remain married. It's not doing anything in terms of her declaration. They don't have to get divorced. There's nothing going on. So certainly that's not the case. Ella Beishet Kohen. It must be the wife of a Kohen. Iberatzon. Again, if it's a voluntary extramarital affair, that's no different than a Yisrael. And Klum Yeshla Ktuba. Is she entitled to Ktuba? Mi Garam Yeshet Yisrael. Beratzon. How is she different than a wife of Yisrael who voluntarily has an extramarital affair where she's not entitled to any Ktuba? So that can't be the case in the Mishnah. Ella, lav, and this is what I was saying to you, the Gemara qualifies what the case is, lav be'onis. Must be a case where it's an Esha Kohen who was raped. Viktane yesh la ktuba, and she is entitled to a ktuba. So you see from this that the woman has a point where she can make this statement, or her claim is, listen, as far as I am concerned, it's not my fault that I was raped. That's definitely not my fault. Number two is, in general, if I was married to any other man besides a Kohen, I'd be entitled to stay in the marriage. So you know whose bad luck this is? It's yours. You're the Kohen. You're field flooded. It's your bad mazel. It's your bad luck. And therefore, she's entitled to her ketubah. The Rambam in the Perush of Mishnayot says that even according to the Mishnah Rishonah, the woman is only believed in a case of ones. It's only believed in a case of rape, not in a case where she declares herself adulterer. She's not believed in that case. So the Rambam believes that the Gemara's qualification of Ones over here, and that's why she keeps her ketubah, is also a qualification of where she's believed. She's only believed when she says she was raped. She's not believed when she says that she had an extramarital affair voluntarily, and she would have to bring evidence or edim to that fact. So the Rambam takes the Gemara's qualification and says that's true of the entirety of that piece of the Mishnah, and that's why she's nehmenet. She's nehmenet because she says rape. If she said it was voluntary, she would not be believed. On the other hand, most of the Mishonim believe that that's only to do with the ketubah. Whether she's entitled to ketubah or not, that's what the Gemara is qualifying, whether it's rape or it was voluntary. But as far as ne'emanut, according to the Mishnah Rishonah, she would be believed in either instance. Amra lebala kereshtani mahu. If she says to her husband that you divorced me, what is the din? Now, if she was divorced, she should be able to show up with her ketubah, or show up with her receipt that she got paid on her ketubah, or with her get, and prove that she is divorced. Obviously, what happened here is she lost those items, or lost that evidence, and she comes, she makes a declaration that she is divorced. Do we believe her? Amar Rav Amnuna, Tashma, our Mishnah. Homeritz me'ani lecha. When a woman declares that she has been defiled, dafilo le'mishnah achrona diktani lo me'emna. Even according to the Mishnah Achrona, she is not believed. Hatam hu demishakra. So in the Mishnah Rishona, she was believed. In the Mishnah Achrona, she wasn't believed. But even in the case of the Mishnah Achrona, when she's not believed, why is that? Hatam hu demishakra. She's lying. The yada, she knows what happened. The balalo yada. And her husband does not know. So in the case of lying about the fact that she, whether she was raped by the case of the Kohen or whether by Yisrael, that it was a extramarital affair, when she makes that declaration, she knows the truth. The husband does not know the truth. So in that situation, the Mishnah Achrona says she's not believed. You know why? Because there's no counter pressure to her claim. There's nobody who could stand her in the face and say, you're lying. Because the husband doesn't have any evidence to the contrary. He has no way of declaring that she is lying. So that's why the Mishnah Achrona says she's not believed. Aval gave gerishtani. In the case where she says, I was divorced from the husband, diyodoba, where the husband knows it, mehamna, she's believed. The husband knows whether she was divorced or not from him. He knows whether he gave her a get or not. So in that case, the chazoka in isha meizapana bifnei bala. A woman is not so brazen as to declare in front of her husband that she was divorced when she could be challenged by the husband who says, I never divorced you. It's not just true about a wife. It's true in general. We have the same claim by Modim and Miksa versus Kofar Bakol. Then, Ein Adam Me'iz Pana Bifnei Bal Chovo. A person will not deny face to face that he borrowed money from someone that did borrow money from him. It's Machloket Rashi and Tosafot. It's the reason that he doesn't do that. But at least there's some sort of, whether it's pangs of guilt or people don't have that chutzpah to stand in front of someone who knows the truth and lie to their face. So because of that, we will believe over here. If she's coming with her husband standing there saying, you divorced me and you gave me a get, and the husband obviously knows whether it's true or not, the fact that the husband denies it or not doesn't really matter now. The fact that she's willing to say such a thing in front of her husband gives us good evidence of the fact that this woman is definitely telling the truth. And so that's what Rav Amnuna says. Even though our Mishnah says that the woman in general is not believed, over here, by the case of divorce, she will be believed, because over here she's doing something that's against her nature. Since it's so against her nature, therefore we are going to believe her. Amalei Rava counters and says, Adarava, just the opposite. Afilu the Mishnah Rishona, Diktani Mehemna. Even according to the Mishnah Rishona, which says that she is believed, now even though this is not the halacha, what Rava is showing you is that this type of concept exists, which is, Dehata Mishum Dulo Avida Livzuye Nafsha. A person is not willing to denigrate themselves in such a manner. Here, she has to come to court and say that either she was raped, or she had an extramarital affair, that is not something that one boasts about. That's not something that shows up in court and talks about openly. So that's the reason that the Mishnah Rishona said that she was believed. Now later on, we said that the women played that card in order to get out of marriages. But nevertheless, the reason they wouldn't do that just willy-nilly is because it's not something that you want to declare about yourself. Sometimes over here, where there's so much pressure on her, she's willing to be me'iz. She's willing to be brazen up and say it to her husband's face. Now, here, takfa gavra, it's not clear what that means. Takfa gavra could mean that she's so unhappy in her marriage that her husband has pushed her to the point where she's willing to lie to his face in order to get out of the marriage. And therefore, we don't believe her because there might be something precipitating her lying over here or being me'iz panav. The chazaka doesn't stand here because there might be a counterforce that is pushing her to lie in this case, even in the face of her husband. And so he says, that's one possibility, that the husband, or it's so unpleasant at the marriage that she's at that point, or Rashi's over here, it says, takala min gavra, means that she has a desire for another man. And that desire is so strong that she's willing to lie to the face of her husband to get out of the marriage to get to this other guy. But for whatever reason, Vava says over here that there are things that precipitate this type of hazat panim because of the fact that she has other driving forces or motives that would cause her to be meiz panav over here. And the reason behind the Mishnah is not about meiz panav, but rather about the question of bizuye, that a person is not generally willing to denigrate themselves in such a manner in order to get their ends. It's brought down, Rishonim, like we spoke about earlier, mentioned already that this idea that a woman is not meiz panav if nei bala is obviously societal or cultural, and over time it did change, and that the women today are much more empowered and feel much more brazen, and this principle of ein isha meiz panav bifnei bala doesn't necessarily exist anymore. That type of concept doesn't exist. And the same thing might be true with in terms of zuye nafsha, that even though the Rishonim don't talk about it, but I would say today in the modern era, that people don't feel ashamed necessarily of declaring extramarital affairs or saying that they're engaged with someone else. So maybe over there also, this idea of zuya nafsha might not apply as well. You have to look at that in the context of the culture, the society, as to whether these are mitigating factors for people not lying. Or is that enough of a reason that they wouldn't lie and they'd only tell the truth? Maybe those have gone away because people are not embarrassed by these things. People are not worried about lying in front of other people. Okay, Meitiv Rav Sharshia, Hashemayim Beni Uvenecha, the Mishnah Rishona, Tiyuvta Durovo. That the Shemayim Beni Uvenecha, and here the Gemara clearly believes, and this is why I said to you before, the Bavli believes that the case here is a case where the man is unable to make his wife pregnant, and therefore she's suing for divorce. In the Mishnah Rishona, she was believed. That's a problem, Durovo. Hocha Daleitla Kisufa. Over there, she's not embarrassed. It's not her problem. It's not something that's wrong with her. It's something wrong with the husband. So there's no embarrassment yet. Victoria de Behemna, she's believed. So Rava says the whole sfara why she's believed in these cases is because she's saying things that are embarrassing about herself. She's saying things that most people would not want to declare about themselves. Over here, she's making a declaration that has nothing to do with her. It has to do with her husband. So why should she be embarrassed? And yet the Mishnah says she is believed. So Rava, you can't be right. That's not the reasoning behind the nemanut of the woman over here. Where it says, no, kasava rovo, hatam came into lo sagila dulo amro, because over there, she doesn't get away with it until she articulates exactly what the problem is. In your rekechets, she has to declare that he does not ejaculate like the shooting of an arrow, meaning that the sperm is not able to impregnate her. Ilo ita kida amro lo amro le. So then, if that was not the case, she would not say, ashamayim beni lebeinecha, lo amro le. She wouldn't have declared it. So, in the first case, when she shows up in debate, then she uses this euphemism, which is Hashamayim Beni Lebenecha. In that case, she's not so embarrassed to talk about it. But, when the Beit Din starts to investigate, she's gonna have to explain the intimate details of why she believes Hashamayim Beni Lebenecha. And over here, this has to do with her making declarations about her husband in the manner of intimacy. Those are embarrassing details that people don't want to talk about in a public forum or in front of the Beit Din. The fact that she's willing to speak about it gives her nemanut, because even though it's not about her, it's about her husband, it's still about private matters or embarrassing details. The fact that she's willing to say it is already evidence of the fact that we believe her in this instance. Hashemayim beni uvencha l'mishnah chrona tavi tiyufta Rav Huna. Hashemayim beni uvencha in the mishnah chrona where she's not believed, that should be a tiyufta Rav Huna. V'hocha diyodahi u'bala yadaba. Here's a case where both parties know. She knows, and the husband knows. And what does Rav Humnuna say? When the case where the husband knows, she won't be me'iza panel. If she's not me'iza panel, and she does do it, and does it anyway, she must be telling the truth. So why isn't she believed, according to the Mishnah Achrona? V'ktani delo me'emna, she's not believed. Kasav Rav Humnuna achanami gufa amra. Because over here, she's the only one who knows. Nehide be'bi'a yoda. A husband and a wife know if they can having bi'a. But biyorekechets miyoda, the husband is not aware of yorekechets. That's something that is a sensation, and that can only be felt by the woman. Mishamachi mishakra, she can lie here without the husband knowing the truth as to whether he's yorekechets or not. He doesn't really know. She has the sensation to know whether that's true or not true. He doesn't have that sensation. But from here, you see, by the way, that if she makes a declaration, that's what the Ran says, according to Rav Amnuna, and the halacha is like Rav Amnuna, that if a woman comes in and says that he's not having bia with me, He's not acting me like a husband and having B.O. with me. Is she believed in that case? In that instance, the husband knows the truth. Because B.O., the Gemara says, is something that the husband knows, whether they're having B.O. or not having B.O. So there, if she makes such a declaration in front of him, then any shame is apaneh b'fnei bala, and she should be ne'emenet, according to Rav Amnuna. So again, that would be the case over here. And then in addition to that, we will connect it to our Mishnah. And in the case where she declares herself divorced, she's allowed to collect her ketubah. And he says we can learn that out of a sefer ketubah. The fact that we permit her now to marry another man, based on this testimony, her ketubah says if she goes out and marries another man, she's entitled to her ketubah. So the Ran says over here, she is entitled to her ketubah. Now, that's only true, and the Tobali and Tosafot talk about this as well, with regards to the Iker ketubah. That's only got to do with the main part of her ketubah, not the Tosefet HaKetubah. Because with regards to Tosefet HaKetubah, the Tosefet HaKetubah, the Gemara in Ketubot, asks whether the Tosefet HaKetubah is there because of Chibat Bi'ah or because of Chibat Chupah. What grants the Tosefet HaKetubah? And it seems that the conclusion there is that it's because of Chibat Bi'ah. But over here, where the woman's declaring that this man is not having Bi'ah with her, is incapable of having Bi'ah with her, then she's not entitled to Tosefet HaKetubah. So even though she's granted the divorce and she gets the ketubah, she's not entitled to the Tosefet HaKetubah, because she's making a declaration or her claim is about something that would not entitle her to her Tosefet HaKetubah. She's basically saying that the marriage never resulted in a bi'ah that would have generated her right to the Tosefet HaKetubah. So over here it says, Amar Rabbi Avi, Dvarim Shebeino Lebeina. When it comes to Dvarim Shebeino Lebeina, he ne'emenet. When it comes to intimate matters, the woman is believed. My taima, him kaim la biyore kecheitz. She knows what is yore becheitz. V'iyu, lo kimle biyore becheitz. And he doesn't know. Mashma mishum to lo kimle mehemna. The reason that she is believed, he doesn't know. Ha kimle, had he known about it, she wouldn't have been believed. That's what the Gemara in Ketubot says. And our Gemara here is just the opposite. Because she has knowledge without her husband, then she is not believed. So how come the Gemara in Ketubot says she's believed? Because she has the trump card, she has the ace card. And over here she's not believed because she has the ace card or the trump card. So the answer is, who's suing for divorce? In the case of Ketubot, they're unable to have children. The husband blames her, she blames the husband. So the husband wants to divorce her in order not to violate the Takanat Rabbeinu Gershom, and so that he can marry someone and have children. But he's blaming the wife for it and says, you're not entitled to a ketubah. Over there, Rabbi says she's believed, because she knows whether he's Yorek Echetz or not. She gets the trump card, because he's the one pushing the divorce. She could stay in the marriage if she wanted. He's blaming her. So over there, she's believed. Over here, she is the one suing for divorce. Since she's the one suing for divorce, she's not entitled to her ketubah if she could be lying about the situation. So over here, we're not going to believe her and give her a ketubah because of the possibility that she has information that the husband cannot deny. And so because of that, she will not be entitled to a ketubah over here. And the answers are different because of who is suing for a divorce in this case. All right, next case. Hai itata, t'chol yoma t'tashmish, mikadma mashi yodei begavra. That this woman used to, every time she had intimate relations with her husband, she used to, whether it was bathe him or wash his hands, whether that means generally she used to wash him before or after the bi'ah, or Rashi quotes over here what is brought down the halacha, which is kedei l'tayer yadav l'achar tashmish. One of the things that requires negovaser, like when you wake up in the morning, you wash negovaser for the tumah in the hands. One of the things that requires negovaser is post bi'ah, post intimate relations. One is supposed to wash negovaser. So she used to bring him the water to wash his hands post bi'ah. Yom achad achalei mayo l'mamasho. So one day she brought him water in order to wash his hands. He says, we didn't have any intimate relations. Why are you bringing me water to wash my hands? So she says, wait a minute. There were these merchants that were selling aloe that were in town. And if it inant lo, do them in home. If it wasn't you, then maybe it was one of them. Now, the woman in this case is basically saying that I thought that we had bi'ah together last night. And that's why I'm bringing you the washing cup to wash your hands. The husband says, we never had bi'ah last night. So then the woman says, okay, if that's the case, I definitely had bi'ah last night. The possibility is that there are these itinerant merchants that are in town. And maybe one of them came into the room last night and I thought it was you. And therefore I had this relationship, or I had relations with him thinking it was my husband. Now, as the Rishonim all point out over here, that this case must be a case of a Kohen. Because as far as the Yisrael is concerned, in this situation where the woman basically declaring that she was, at best, a shogeg, maybe even korev lones, meaning that she didn't know, she made a mistake, she didn't intentionally engage in this extramarital affair, then certainly she's not obligated to get divorced in that case. So her declaration over here does not help her to get out of the marriage, and therefore there's nothing to discuss. And that's what the Rambam says in the Parash of Mishnayot. He says over here, Aval Eshet Yisrael Afil Shunamino Tatiyeh Muter Afisha Ta'ut Upitoi Chelek Min Ones Velo Safek. He says that whenever a person makes a mistake or was seduced somehow, that is in the world of Ones, that's not someone who had a voluntary extramarital affair. That's the way the Rambam declares it. And therefore, as far as the Yisrael is concerned, that's not an issue over here. So it must be that the case here is a case of a Kohen. And there, even if it was Ones, which is what she's declaring, that she didn't know, the only one it could be an issue for is a Kohen. And therefore, all the Rishonim point out that these cases or these situations must be talking about a Kohen. So she's making a declaration that doesn't make her look so bad, because she basically says it happened by accident, but she's declaring herself unfit to remain in this marriage at this point. Amar Rav Nachman, Enea natna ba'acher v'leitba mashasha b'milo. We don't listen to her because she's basically fallen in love with someone else. And this is a way for her to exit her marriage cleanly. And she's playing this game in order to get out of her marriage. Or in other words, what Rav Nachman is saying is this is equivalent to the case in our Mishnah. In the case in our Mishnah, where she says, Tmeya Nilecha. She does it. She's a little smarter. She doesn't say Tmeya Nilecha. She pretends as if it was her husband, knowing that, and then his husband's going to say, I didn't have to be out with you. And she'll, oh my goodness, must have been someone else. Rav Nachman says she's playing this game in order to get out of her marriage. Unless she can prove to us the fact that there was really a problem here, she cannot get out of the marriage. We will not assume that there was an extramarital affair of her. There was this woman who did not have a clear mind about this individual. Usually what that means is she wasn't happy. She wasn't smiling that day at her husband. Why is today any different than any other day? Every other day you're happy, you're smiling. Why today are you not happy? I never had such a difficult bia with you as last night. Usually it's so pleasant to have intimate relations with you, and that's why I'm so happy. Last night, for whatever reason, it was so rough, it was so difficult, I'm left in tremendous pain, and that's why I'm not happy today. The husband says back to her, I wasn't together with you last night, what are you talking about? So he goes, wait a minute, there were these merchants in town that were selling neft, that were selling the pitch, that were selling kerosene, that were in town. If it's not you, then maybe it was one of them. Again, same as the scenario that we saw before. Amar Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman again over here declares, lo tashkichun ba, we're not going to listen to her. She is looking to get out of the marriage. She's fallen in love with someone else. And this is her escape route from the marriage in a respectable manner for her to get out of her marriage without losing her tuba, without having to denigrate herself in any way. And we're not going to let her get away with this unless she has evidence to support her claim. How gavro dava maherzik bebeita hu veintata. So there was this man and woman who were secluded together in a house. The woman who's a married woman, the man who's not her husband, has yichud with this woman in the house. Al ata marid beita. The husband comes home in the middle of their being secluded in the house. Prate noef luhutza v'orak. The noef, the supposed perpetrator of the adultery over here, bursts out of the house. He breaks through, whether it's the wall or whether it's the window, but it's some sort of reed gate or fence that's there. He breaks it and runs out. Amarova, itito sharia. The woman is muteret to her husband. Imito da'avad isura. If they had actually acted and they had had an adulterous affair, irkuse havimirkas, he would have hidden. Meaning that the person now that he's bursting out of the house in this manner and people are going to see him and it's going to be a public issue, that means that he really didn't have this affair with the woman because he would be embarrassed for the fact that he had had an extramarital affair. And if he was embarrassed about it, he would have hid or he would have tried to escape in a quiet manner. The fact that he escapes in such a public manner, in such a public way, means that obviously nothing took place at the time. Or you could argue that had something taking place and he wanted this to happen again, then he would have hidden so that nobody knew about it. Over here, where he bursts out, the husband's going to know that something's going on, and he's going to be much more careful in the future, or it's going to cause a problem in the future. So he wouldn't have made it into a public issue. He would have been much more quiet or discreet about it. So that's what the Rebbe declares over here. Now, the Rishonim ask, what exactly is the problem over here? Why would you have a Havamina, this woman is a surah to her husband? All that you had is a Yichud. Yichud is not sufficient grounds for a wife to be a surah to her husband. The only time it's sufficient grounds is if there was kinui and stira ahead of time, if the husband warned her not to seclude with this individual. So some of the Rishonim actually say that. That here there's a case where he warned her ahead of time, and that's why there's a problem here. Others suggest that it's a problem because there's too much circumstantial evidence. Found in the house, secluded with this woman, in a situation that seems to be precarious. So already over there, that already gives circumstantial evidence. So therefore, we're going to worry about the extramarital affair because there's too much circumstantial evidence in this instance. Others still say that it's a husband. The husband was a Baal Nefesh. He didn't want to be together with his wife if there was any issue over here. So even though she's not technically a surah because of the ichud, the husband felt uncomfortable. He says, I don't want to be together. She says nothing happened. But still there was ichud. So the husband says he doesn't want to be together with her. Rava comes on and says, you don't have to worry about anything. There was no extramarital affair over here. And even a Baal Nefesh does not have to be machmir on himself in this case. Right now, the last case here in Nidarim, Ho Noif, Dali Gabe Hai Intita. There was this adulterer that was together with this woman, Ata Gavra. So her husband came home. They were about to engage in intimacy. Salik Noif. Here the Noif went. Itiv Biklai, Bava. He went and hid. According to the Rani, he hid behind the door. According to others, he hid in the kippah that's above the door. He hid in the domed roof area up above. He hid somewhere where he would not be caught. Right? So this, according to Rava, that's already evidence of the fact that there is something wrong over here because the guy's hiding. Havamachtan tachale taman. There were this crest that was laying there out. Vitaminun chibyon. He saw that a snake had come over those crests. And we are afraid whenever a snake gets involved in situations, that's why Mayim Megulim and Yayim Megule, is that the snake deposits a venom in that case. The husband, the owner of the house, the husband wants to eat from this crest. So he's approaching the crest below Daita de Intita without the wife's knowledge. Now whether the wife doesn't know that the husband's about to eat the crest, or the wife's not aware of the fact that there was a snake that had crawled over this stuff beforehand. But either way, she doesn't know that information. She can't warn the husband not to eat it. The guy gives up his hiding place and says, don't eat them. Because the snake already had tasted from them. So the guy saves the life of the husband over here. The husband would have died had he eaten it. He saves the life of the husband. He gives up the fact that there might have been some untoward behavior over here by giving up his hiding place to save the guy's life. Amarava intita shari. The wife is muteret. Iita da'avari surah. Nechale de'lechav limot. If he had really had intimacy or an extramarital affair with this woman, he'd want the husband to die because then he can marry the woman. He'd want to get the husband out of the way. The fact that he's not getting the husband out of the way is evidence of the fact that he's not having an extramarital affair. Dichtiv. Because it says, Ki na'afu v'dam b'yedehem. That there's a connection between adultery and killing. Which is those that adulter, we also suspect them of ritzicha, of killing. And so over here, even though maybe we don't suspect them of active killing, but maybe over here where it's a passive, he would let the guy die because it further benefits him in his ni'uf. Then he can carry on his affair with this woman if the husband's out of the way. Where it says, pshita. What's the question over here? The fact that the guy saved the husband's life is pretty good indication that he didn't have an extramarital affair with the woman. Ma'u detema. What would I have thought? Isura avit. He did something that was restricted. Having the extramarital affair with this woman was clearly something that is not allowed. V'hai damarlei. So why does he keep the husband alive? De nechalei de lo limot bal. It's better that the husband stays alive. To have intite ilavei. Mayim gnuvim imtaku, the lechem starim yinam. In that case, mayim gnuvim imtaku, stolen waters are sweeter, and the bread that is hidden is much more pleasant. I mean that there is a ta'ava, there's an excitement about having the extramarital affair. Once the woman is muteret to him, then there's no more excitement in having that type of affair. So what you would have thought is the reason he keeps the husband alive is because that makes it more exciting, keeps the extramarital affair alive in the sense that he's going to be sneaking in and having this affair with this woman who's otherwise married. That's why he saves the husband's life. And therefore he shouldn't be believed, because the reason he's saving his life is because that will promote the excitement of him continuing to have this extramarital affair. And he really did have an extramarital affair. Kamash Malan, that we don't say that. Now Rashi seems to say, as Kamash Malan, is that we don't ascribe those types of machshavot to an adulterer. The adulterer doesn't just think in those manners. He just thinks about access to the woman. On the other hand, Tosfot says, Kedamr v'sanedrin ital tam biyah v'nitan ovrei avera. Kamash Malan, dunoif en yodeze. That the adulterer just doesn't know that. He doesn't know yet that once the husband's out of the picture, this woman will not be so appealing. Because he's only had an extramarital affair with this woman. And so he doesn't recognize or understand the psychology of the extramarital affair, which is that she's so appealing because her husband's still there. Once her husband's out of the picture, this woman's not going to be so appealing to him. So that's what the Kamash Malan is, that the Noef doesn't understand that. He doesn't understand why he's having so much fun right now. It's because she's a surah. And therefore he doesn't know enough to keep the husband alive, to keep that feeling alive. He'd rather have the husband out of the way, because he thinks more is better if the husband's out of the way. He doesn't understand that. On the other hand, Rashi just says, that Mefaresh Avir seems to indicate that we don't assign these types of cheshbonot. That in a way, isn't so smart to think ahead into that situation. He's all about access. And getting rid of the husband is access, and that's all he thinks about. He doesn't make these cheshbonot. Even though he might know this, it's just not something that's on the top of his mind in that type of consideration. Kamash Malon, that we don't say that. Some want to say from here that it shows you how far we have to go in terms of Dan Lekaf Schut. That over here, even though the person is clearly in a compromised situation, and we would assume that over here, that the worst with regards to this individual, nevertheless, we're Dan Lekaf Schut because he saved this guy's life. Now that's not so simple, because the Rabbeinu Yonah on a vote says when it comes to the din of Dan Lekaf Schut, it only applies to people who are deserving of the Kaf Schut. Which is that it only has to do with a benoni, someone who's a normal person. A tzaddik, you always have to be done them if they did the right thing. A rasha, there's no obligation to be done a rasha the kaf schut, because that's just silliness. That's foolishness to be done the kaf schut. Where a benoni, ish benoni, you're done the kaf schut because sometimes he does good, sometimes he does bad, so therefore there's an obligation to be done the kaf schut. So over here, it's not so clear that this guy is considered to be a benoni, that you'd be have to be dan lekaf schut, because here is acting in a manner that is really compromised. He's secluded with a woman, he's in this guy's house. Maybe now that he saved the guy's life, maybe we think differently of him, but still, that you would have to dan lekaf schut, it's not so clear that that is the obligation in this instance. Alright, with that we finish Masechet Nedarim, and Hadran Alach, Ve'elu Nedarim, Eslik Allah, Masechet Nedarim. And tomorrow we will begin the sister Masechta Denarim, Masechet Nazir.